Hi, this is Jean Bruce Scott.
And Randy Reinholz.
And when we're not busily producing some of the most outstanding Native American theater in Los Angeles,
we always like to check out the best of British audio adventures with Alex Lefchuk and his team of the Midweek Drive.
And Midweek Drive morning editions on Siren FM.
And southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com.
Give me plenty of that guitar.
I've been traveling on a boat and a plane, in a car, on a bike, with a bus and a train. Traveling there, traveling here, everywhere, in every gear. But oh Lord, we pay the price with the spin of a wheel, with the roll of the dice. Ah yeah, you pay your fare, and if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. Traveling through the dirt and the grime, from the past to the future, through the space and the time. Traveling deep beneath the waves, in watery grottos and mountainous caves. But ah, Lord, we got to fight with the thoughts in the head, with the dark and the light. No use to stop and stare, and if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. Skin of my teeth by the breath of her hair. Traveling where the fall winds blow, with the sun on my face, in the ice and the snow. But ooh-wee, it's a game. Sometimes you're cool, sometimes you're lame. Ah yeah, it's somewhere. If you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. We pay the price with the spin of the wheel, with the roll of the dice. Ah yeah, you pay your fare, and if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. I keep traveling around the bend. There was no beginning, there is no end. It wasn't born and never dies. There are no edges, there is no size. Ah yeah, you just don't win. It's so far out, the way out is in. Bow to God and call him sir, but if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. And if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. If you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there.
Well, if we are about to speak to his sister, of course, Louise Harrison, who's joining us to talk about a little biography, My Kid Brother's Band, about George Harrison, we felt we had to play some George Harrison, especially as it introduces the tremendously talented, amazingly awesome actress extraordinaire from San Diego. It's Annette Andre. Hey! How are you, Annette?
Hello, hello.
Good. Did you ever meet? I mean, because we talked last time about, obviously, when you managed to smuggle George Best out of the flat and all the rest of its pieces. Did you ever meet any of the Beatles when they were around, or George?
Oh,
or
yes, anybody? I did. Yes. I didn't meet, but I spoke on the telephone to Paul.
Yeah.
at some point, only because I was staying with Jane Asher away. We were doing a television show.
Yeah.
And I was staying with Jane Asher, and she was going out with him.
Of course,
time, so
yes.
So he used to call, and I picked up the phone.
Yeah.
And then I knew, I met Ringo a few times.
Right, yeah, yeah. Well, you see them, and they're both still alive, so that's the important thing. You know, clearly, if only George and John had actually had a word with you, they would have still been with us as well. Never mind.
That's right.
It's positivity. Quick introduction in the studio. We have Andy Brown, who's one of our ace engineering souls, etc., and is very keen to hear the latest audio missive from your good self.
Absolutely, yeah. So it's nice to meet you on the airwaves, isn't it?
Exactly. So
hello, how are you?
I'm fantastic here, and looking forward to hearing more from your good self.
Exactly. So what's the topic for August, Annette?
It's how Mother Alphonsus led me into a life of rapes, rides, and rescues. A kindred spirit of mine passed away recently in Los Angeles. Most won't know her name, June Foray, but many couldn't imagine their childhoods without Rocky the Flying Squirrel or Natasha Fatal, character she gave voice to on the 1960s TV series Rocky and Bullwinkle. She began her extraordinary 85-year-long career in 1929 in a radio drama playing an elderly woman when she was 12. In the 30s and 40s, she brought to life hundreds of radio characters before cackling, chirping, meowing, snoring, burping, singing, and speaking a dozen accents in fractured English in over 300 cartoons, feature films, and television shows. At 94, she was the oldest person to win an Emmy Award for her work on a Garfield the Cat TV special. Like June Foray, I too began my acting career in radio at a fairly young age. Thanks to a Brigidine nun called Mother Alphonsus, I trained at a radio acting academy owned by her childhood chum. And so, quite improbably, this devout woman of the cloth was responsible for my career that, spanning the years, included a fair number of rapes, rides, and rescues over the airwaves, in films, and on the stage. Compared to the UK and America, television came late to Australia, and I, for one, was blessed by the delay. That mahogany, cathedral-shaped Philips radio in our sitting room was my passport to a world beyond the Great Barrier Reef. Like the BBC, our airwaves were filled with dramas and comedies, classical music, and big band pops. It was a magical time in my life when I was forced to spend long stretches bedridden with a chronic lung condition. Unlike TV, radio was the theater of my mind. Imagination was the elixir that transformed the words and sounds escaping from the Philips speaker into my very own company of players. I never truly understood the meaning of carrying coals to Newcastle until I auditioned for the radio school. Mother Alphonsus's friend praised my rendition of a Shakespeare sonnet and a reading from Ibsen's A Doll's House, but she said there was one thing that required immediate attention. "You'll need to develop an Australian accent," she said in a prime example. Starting at age 8, my mother had insisted on my taking elocution lessons so that I'd sound educated. By the time my vowels and consonants had been scrubbed clean, I'd lost all trace of my native accent, replaced by what my instructor proudly called BBC Mid-Atlantic. Not exactly an asset in a country that some thought used language as a revenge against the mother country. I was a monumentally shy child, and like so many actors, I overcame this fear by becoming someone else. And so, for the 6 months that I trained at the radio school, I honed my technique of slipping into characters and accents by using a Blanche Dubois Southern patois on the local chemist, and saved my Betty Davis arch disdain for the greengrocer's limp carrots. Radio in the 1950s Australia still had a bit of the old west about it. Actors were also meant to pitch in and do the sound effects when emergencies arose, and in memory, they seemed to arrive on a reliable schedule. A case in point was a popular serial called Kid Grayson Rides the Range. I played the kid's girlfriend. We did 5 shows a week. The scripts rehearsed one day and recorded on 20-inch discs the next day for airing at 5 p.m. On this particular recording day, I arrived at the studio in the morning to discover a perfect storm of frenzy. The recording machine had packed it in, and the special effects man was home with the flu. The engineers banged and throttled for hours on end, but the recorder remained stubbornly stumm. The clock was moving relentlessly toward the 5 o'clock hour when the producer called out, "Listen, mates, there's no recording for today's show, so we'll have to do it on the fly." On the fly, a phrase that sent actors into rigor mortis, meant doing the show live. And to boot, we'd have to do all the sound effects as well. If you've seen that hilarious stage farce, Noises Off, you'll have some idea of the mayhem that 5 actors created packed around the microphone, saying their lines and then dashing off to the sound effects cart to bang away with coconut shells to reproduce galloping horses, madly tearing open and slamming shut creaky doors, and wildly firing off round after round of blank shots. Miraculously, all was coming off without a hitch, until the actor playing a brutal villain misread his cue and delivered what was to be my terrified plea in his booming basso voice. "Oh, I beg you, don't shoot, he's the love of my life." Without thinking, I automatically read the villain's dialogue in my natural soprano. "You've run out of road, kid. It's curtains for you and the little lady." Out it went live to hundreds of thousands of homes like a demented, out-of-sync soundtrack. The only saving grace was that we weren't on the telly, or the audience would have seen 5 actors silently convulsed, struggling very hard not to collapse into laughter. It may sound strange for someone who's known for her films and TV shows, but pushed to a choice, I'd take sound over picture hands down. As Alex proved so conclusively week after week, nothing beats your imagination. There you go. Over to you, Alex.
What can I say, Annette? I mean, I'm blushing all over, or perhaps I should say, I'm...
all over the place.
All over the place. It's amazing. I was just, because, again, it's wonderfully timed, because with Andy being an engineer, Andy, within your experience in radio, I know you've done a great deal of radio drama, but in terms of on-air material, did that resonate with yourself?
Oh, yes, yes. There's nothing more than strikes the fear into a presenter or a technician when you see the systems go down. And it's not a new thing. We all have computers that go down on modern radio stations plenty times, and you've got to make the best of it, haven't you?
That's right. And I don't know if you've ever encountered it. Perhaps it was just in the old days where we actually did occasionally have to lend a hand with the sound effects. There may have been a lot of sound effects and only one technician, and you know, it became a little bit too much, and we'd sort of hop at the table, and whoever was off the microphone, we'd have to do something like the coconut shells or pouring a drink or doing. But this time, it really got all mashed up.
Well, in a radio station, we do have similar events, and it's all hands to the pump. Who's dashing around to find? Well, I'm going to say CDs and mini discs and that kind of thing.
How quaint!
Yes,
CDs,
exactly.
Compact discs.
Exactly. Everyone has to revert to the basics if there's a problem, don't we?
I'll be bringing out the vinyl next. Dear Lord.
It does sort of relieve the boredom, though, doesn't it?
Oh, that's one way of putting it, Annette. That's very true.
Not that there's a lot of boredom, but it does cheer things up a little bit. You have a good laugh afterwards. Sometimes. I'm not too sure about always.
It certainly keeps us on our toes. Now, Annette, if you'd be kind enough to stay with us, I'm going to give you a little choice here, because it's a little bit of a mini-expanded version here, because you're going to be at a prisoner convention in September, so you'll be doing various other bits and pieces in Northern California. Again, we'll be working through that. Would you like us to play the theme to The Prisoner for you, to kind of get you into the swing of things, or would you like Randall and Hopkirk Deceased? Which one would you like?
We might as well play The Prisoner, why not?
I think so. We'll be back with you in about 2 minutes from the thunderclap.
Okay.
not just 50 years since the Summer of Love of 1967, but of course 50 years since the prisoner Patrick McGoohan stormed down that corridor, slapped his resignation down, and ended up taking a slightly extended vacation. I still feel he should have listened to you more in that, in terms of your character in the whole thing. You know, if your father's going to blow up things, just relax. You know, it's okay. Are you
that
looking...
music is set suitably frenzied, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, it's exactly. I mean, you can almost sort of feel him going into that, I'm not a number, I'll not be stamped, briefed, debriefed, indexed, and so on.
It's back in the era when a theme song actually had a meaning to it as well. Do you not think, Annette?
No, absolutely. And one of the things that Arthur and I talk about is the fact that the theme music for most of the British series is really the best in the world. They do wonderful theme music.
And
I think it's because, as you say, it fits the theme of what that is. So yeah. Much music today is just music for the hell of having music, racing or, you know, and forever droning on in the background. Mm.
The late producer Gerry Anderson, who I was fortunate enough to meet and work with on a number of occasions, always said that for him, the most important thing of all his programmes was the opening credit sequence. Because he felt if he could actually hook people on that 2 minute, well, on that 30 set, 1 minute set, yeah. Have a good theme. Obviously, Barry Gray wrote an awful lot of soundtracks from that point of view, then that they would stay with it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Very important, he's right.
And of course, Edwin Astley, of course, who did the theme to Randall and Hopkirk, The Saint, and many, many more in terms of the ITC era.
I know, it always got to you, you knew what it was going to be, and it was there, you were absolutely right. Yeah. Yep.
It worked through that. So, are you set for the convention, Annette? Have you psyched yourself up? Are you ready to actually go and give them heck and all manner of marvellous
things?
Yes,
I'm going to be in London on the 20th mm-hmm. of September.
Yep.
And the actual event is the 29th, which is the day that it started.
Yeah.
And it's at Port Merion, where I've never been. I mean, everybody thinks we did it in Port Merion. It's well documented that it wasn't.
The magic
they
of TV.
They did a lot of stock shots there. Yeah. We did it all in the studio.
So finally, it's taken them 5 decades to get you to the actual location itself, but they got there in the end.
I know. I wondered why I never got there before, but there we are. So I'm going this time.
It was probably because
it would be quite fun.
It was probably because Annette, you were so good at actually reacting to the shots of background footage, suggesting you were either in Cannes, Nice, any other Europe, Paris, any European, or indeed even in Wales, looking after dinosaur, well, not giant ants eggs with Simon
That's
Temple.
Right.
They said it's okay. She'll believe it because you know she's done radio, so she's okay with respect to that. She doesn't have to go to Port Murray, and she can stay in the studio.
That's about it.
Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant stuff. And I mean, again, it's just a shock. We will have to get you back to the Siren Studios or one of the studios before too long. I know it's going to be too hectic on the 29th, but it's been far too long since you're actually in the studio with us as well, Annette.
I know. Last time, of course, I was paid to because I got so sick.
Well, that's the other thing. You've got to maintain your fitness. That's important. So positive vibes
do,
on that,
so
I think. So, yes,
go to the gym every morning, I do. This time is going to be a little bit short, but we will work that around and hopefully next time.
Absolutely. Now, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Always do.
And can we prevail upon you to connect? Because obviously Arthur's going to have to do double duties. Obviously he'll be on for September the 6th and probably back end of September as well. So will you be back with us in October?
I will. Yes, later October, because I don't get home back till mid-October.
I think we'll look to the end of October, which will be the fall, of course, and it'll be also we'll be sort of almost thinking about trick or treating. Who knows? You might even have a new president then. Oh, sorry, I said I wouldn't be political. You know,
time for rejoicing. Definitely a celebration.
Yeah, we just let it go. I mean, he's lasted over 100 days now, so he's still hanging on in there, and you know. Maybe he's one.
I'm not going to even comment about. No,
absolutely,
I don't want to get into a raging.
Just one suggestion. How about a job swap with Kim Jong Un? You know, a kind of president of North Korea becomes president of the United States for a day, and Donald Trump becomes president of North Korea. I just, you know, it could lead
That's
to a whole range
idea.
Of things there. And certainly put Guam on the map. Anyway, Annette, take care. We will speak again very soon in October. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye now.
Blinded by the light, wrapped up like a douche, another runner in the night. Blinded by the light, wrapped up like a douche, another runner in the night.
Talking about anniversaries, it's astounding to find just how long Only Fools and Horses has been with us. And indeed, comedy TV channel Gold, who have actually commissioned some new research to celebrate its very own 25th birthday, and a couple of retrospective documentaries, David Jason, My Life on Screen, and The Story of Only Fools and Horses. However, there are many folk who actually say, if we're taking the whole aspect of Del Boy and Rodney literally, how would they be today in the second decade of the 21st century, after, of course, they were declared bankrupt in 2001. Now, to address this, who better than a tremendously talented individual? She's basically a Renaissance woman. It's the fabulous financial expert extraordinaire, Jasmine Birtles. How are you, Jasmine?
I love you. Can I just tell you that I love you for saying that? I feel wonderful now. Absolutely. Renaissance woman. I'll just tell everybody. I'm Jasmine Birtles, Renaissance woman.
It's always a delight to touch base with your good self, Jasmine. Now, looking to this particular survey, some of the top 10 business ideas, it would seem that actually
actually our two heroes might have been okay, actually.
Yes, absolutely. And this is an extraordinary thing. I mean, bless them. You know, they spent all those episodes struggling and failing. But actually, we looked at their basic assets, if you like, and saw how much they would be worth now if they just held on to everything. And we found they really genuinely would be multimillionaires. It's things like their three-bedroom flat in Peckham, which they owned, as you know, they inherited it. And that, because it's big and where it is, it could be worth up to £850,000, just that on its own. And then they got their lock-up, that would be 25 grand. They've got their Dell's Classic, it would be now Classic, Ford Capri, 25 grand, as long as he'd kept it nicely. But the big news, the really big news, was his pair of diamond cufflinks that Del Boy had, and they're blue diamonds, and because they're blue diamonds, they are worth £1 million each. So just those diamonds, those cufflinks, makes them multimillionaires.
Clearly, they just needed to believe in themselves. And if we're taking the notion of multi-dimensions and one person's fiction is another person's reality, I'm sure they're doing extraordinarily well. Looking at the business interests, though, I mean, I was astounded to find that, number one, who would have thought it? Peckham Spring Water, their top 10 business ideas as voted for by Brits, etc. 38% of folk actually voted for this one as a way forward. I mean, I know spring water and the whole notion of bottled water, it's probably the precursor to bottled air. But, you know, quite an interesting sort of one there in terms of obviously the range of things that could have been put up there. Obviously, we've got Trotter's Ethnic Tours, Trotter Crash Turbans, Indoor Sunbed Salesman. Is this something that's peculiarly British, Jasmine? I mean, in terms of the fact that, actually, this is just something which maybe it's eccentricity meets the entrepreneur.
Yes, do you know, we are really good at coming up with business ideas. We are an entrepreneurial country. I think what we're not so good at is, if you like, keeping it going. We have a too much of a short-term view. Whereas, for example, in Germany, they take more of a long-term view and they say, OK, you're not going to make money in the first couple of years, but, you know, we'll assume by year five you're going to start making a profit. But we do come up with good ideas. I mean, you know, his idea, for example, of pet sitting. Well, we've got Dog Buddy now. That's dogbuddy.com. We've also got borrowmydoggy.com. In fact, I use that because I love dogs and I can't have one, so I borrow somebody else's dog every now and then. You know, and these are ideas that Del Boy had. He just needed more help and probably a few people who really knew what they were doing to help him make these ideas and turn them into something that's a long-term goer.
Working through 60 episodes of Only Fools and Horses, 7 series and so on, are there any other unexplored gems, or have we actually pored over the whole thing, or is it a case of, well, the future's always going to be uncertain, that's what makes it fun?
Well, yes, I think you're right. You know, the future is always uncertain, and I like to think that Del Boy and Rodders are not just enjoying their riches, but still looking to make a fast buck somewhere else. I wonder if Del Boy particularly would be going, blockchain, cryptocurrency, Rodders, we should get into that. Let's make our own coin. I bet they'd be out there trying to come up with their own, creating their own coinage now. That would be the new thing.
I think my own personal favourite would be the pop-up telescopic Christmas tree, which I thought was a wonderful idea. What about your own favourites, Jasmine? Was there anything there which you thought, that's a business I think I might sort of continue diversify into?
Yes, well, it would be, because as I say, I love dogs, and so it probably would be the dog-sitting one. But, you know, the chandelier cleaning, part of me likes that idea, even though nowadays not many people have chandeliers. But it does mean that you would get to go to nice posh houses and have a look at the way they live and hopefully clean the chandeliers properly.
And safely, of course.
Safely,
you
yes.
You don't want it crashing down, because that would be a completely different scenario. It's
exactly.
A bit like a radio presenter trying to be cool and then falling off the back of his chair. It's not going to work. Not at all.
I'm sure you never do that.
Oh, Jasmine, this is wonderful. In terms of, again, finding out further details, presumably you can go to the Girl Channel and actually sort of catch up, obviously, with back issues of Only Fools and Horses.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, and you know, on Tuesday, as you mentioned, they've got the story of Only Fools and Horses. Mm. That's at 5 p.m. And then David Jason, My Life on Screen, that's tomorrow at 5 p.m. So 6 p.m. And so, you know, go and have a little look at what they're doing, because it's good fun stuff.
One of these days with technology, I'm sure we'll see a connection where we have have David Jason's character in Only Fools and Horses meeting Inspector Frost, and it'd be a different sort of area there.
Very different.
I'll obviously give a plug to jasminebirtles.com, absolutely wonderful go-to website for all manner of delightful things. Can we look at any other series, do you think, Jasmine, that might sort of equally, I mean, Dad's Army, not quite the same routine, even though created by the same folk, really.
Well, very good point. Yes, nowadays, yeah, and actually this is one of the things that we found with the assets that they had on Only Fools and Horses. Granddad's silver cigarette case from the Zulu War, 150 quid, which is, you know, not bad. His medals came to £57, so it's not bad. But I think, yes, so Dad's Army, I'm not sure how much their items would be worth
exactly.
Now.
Exactly, this is it. I mean, as I say, that Reliant Regal Supervan 3, that was the one that suddenly blew me away. It's amazing.
Yes.
Two final questions for your good self. Jasmine, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
I have had a very reasonably interesting telephonic link with you, sir. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Hopefully we can connect with you again in the not-too-distant future with Matters Financial and more. Will you be kind enough to return?
Absolutely, I'd love to. Totally.
We've got some off-price crack ties, some miles and miles of carpet tiles, TVs, deep freeze, and David Bowie LPs, pool games, gold chains, wuss names, and Oedipus, and Trevor Frosty track suits from a mush and shepherd's bush. Bush, 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 bush. No income tax, no VAT, no money back, no guarantee. Black or white, rich or poor, we'll cut prices at a straw.
Hey there, everybody. I'm filmmaker, podcaster, California State Certified Violence Prevention Specialist, and podiatrist to the stars, Phil Lernis. And I've been proud to be a U.S. cultural correspondent for Alex Lefchuk's Midweek Drive program for many years now. And I congratulate you, dear listener, on having found this oasis of podcast audio magic in the cosmos. Or on your internet-equipped mobile device. Or your computer.
Indeed. It's spooky but strangely wonderful, Andy, that you finally get a chance to actually say a quick hidey-hi to the awesomeness that is Phil Lernis.
Absolutely. Hello, Phil, and thank you for joining us today.
Hidey-hi, Andy. Hello. How are you?
Very, very good. And yourself?
Oh, why lie? It's been a rough 12 hours for me since returning from a concert at the Hollywood Bowl last night, but I'm here. I'm here through the magic of our transatlantic relationship.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons
that's the important
why. You see, Phil might be an ideal person. Having just spoken to Annette Andre, I think she was very polite, but she poo-pooed my idea of a solution to world challenges. A job swap between President Trump and President Kim Jong-un. Swap over, give Donald the chance to actually look after North Korea for, say, a week, you know, give it a week, and then Kim Jong-un could actually sit in the White House again for a week. I mean, Phil, you know, what's not to appreciate about that?
Well, what's not to appreciate is that, at least in this country, our president does have certain checks and balances that restrain his power. I shudder to think what he could do for a week in Korea.
Very well put, sir.
But I mean, I wouldn't mind if they switched haircuts. Now that would be terrific. I mean, wouldn't that just...
There has been a Photoshop doing the internet rounds that has that exact thing that you mentioned there, Phil.
Well, that's terrific. I don't know where I was going to go prior to that question. Oh, I was going to share this with you. The first time I ever came to England, not the time that I met you, Alex, but when I was there to show a film called Spectres back in, I guess it would have been early 2004, there was expected to be, when I was traveling over during the night, a vote of no confidence for, I believe, Tony Blair. And I got into this conversation with several, citizens of the UK there on the flight. And I said that we were all really quite shocked at how much dismay and disapproval there was for Mr. Blair, because in America, he received outstanding press. The view of him from America was quite favorable. And they said something that was not in jest, I realized, and I thought it was really quite, it opened my eyes to the difference between leadership that's required in the different countries. They said, oh yes, we have no doubt that Tony Blair would make an excellent president of the United States. He's simply a terrible prime minister. That was very fascinating to me that, you know, there are, and I don't know if that's true. I don't know if he was a terrible prime minister. I'm not saying that, but I do think that it was interesting that there was a view on parts, on the part of people in your country that those jobs are different. The president and prime minister are different, that they require different skill sets, and probably different temperaments and different approaches. And I don't think we here in America very often, we view the whole world through the prism of our experience. So I think we think that every world leader, and certainly Donald Trump feels that way, right, that every world leader should behave like he does.
You see, clearly the Peter Mandelson impact that we started the program with a matter of 2 English hours ago has resonated through this whole sort of piece. And William Coles will probably say that's exactly why Peter Mandelson should have maintained his Hartlepool nature and spread it to the world. Lord Mandelson, etc. It's amazing. Tony Blair, of course, good friend, I believe, of the Mandelson in time.
I believe so, yes.
And clearly, from that perspective, probably unlikely to ever achieve his aim of being President of Europe, which is, I think, what he quite fancied. He's probably still looking for those weapons of mass destruction that led to a bit of a contretemps in the world. You know, he's probably saying, they must be here somewhere, Cherie. I'm sure they are. Anyway, so it goes. I'm obviously trivialising great geopolitical events here in the 17th year of the 21st century, and clearly it's just the way one has been, really. Phil, how was Disneyland? Let's get back to hard politics. Did you enjoy it with your godson?
Well, not my godson, Lily's godson.
All right, okay.
But, perhaps my future, my future nephew.
Yeah, exactly.
If I ever get around
okay.
to.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we've only been dating for 10 years, so we don't rush these things.
Exactly.
But though I will admit that as soon as he met me, he and his nieces and nephews some 10 years ago immediately began referring to me as Uncle Phil. Except for the oldest boy, who was a teenager at that time, he said, "Phil, why are they referring to you as Uncle Phil? You're not a part of the family." And I explained that because referring to me as Aunt Phil would be disrespectful. So anyway, Disneyland was outstanding. It's a workout. And never more so than when you have a young boy who is fascinated by his wristwatch that tells him how many steps he's taken through the day and converts that into miles. And, it is mind over matter, is it not, Alex? But when you keep hearing at 10 o'clock at night that you've walked over 8 miles that day and you still have 2 more hours to go before you're back to the car, but you start, at my age, you start aching in places you didn't know you had places.
That's part of being human, as we were just saying. Ultimately, you need to keep that exercise going. Earlier in the program, Phil, something you can catch up with on podcast, we had another originally Phil Learness suggestion, but through the magic of R.W. Saunders, Randy Naught, or as I pronounced his name for the first 10 minutes of the interview, Randy Naught. It's okay. I mean, I have my M. Night Shyamalan moments, as Phil will
we're
appreciate.
All learning. We're
exactly.
All learning.
It's, of course, not Shyamalan, it's Shyamalan. Or something along those bases.
Yeah, whatever.
It's tomato, tomato. It's just...
you know what? What we've started to do... I don't know if you have this drink there, but do you have a clamato? Do you have that drink there?
I don't...
That clams in tomato juice? Is that something that you can buy there?
I don't think I've ever seen
those. Not in the northeast of England, and nor, I suggest, in the East Midlands either.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that you would want to, but that's something that gets advertised here as clamato. So that's our version now, as we say clamato, clamato, instead of tomato, tomato. I wanted to ask, I haven't spoken with you since then, and sadly, if it's available on podcast, I haven't heard it, so this is a great opportunity to plug it, Alex. Did the interview with Linda Harrison take place?
You mean Louise Harrison?
Linda
Harrison, of course, being Nova in Planet of the Apes, and somebody else who's an awesome individual, but I think she's possibly passed on to different generations at this particular stage. Louise Harrison is your warm-up act on Wednesday next, Phil, when we're back live in the Siren Saloon.
My apologies to both Lady Harrison.
Exactly. But we've been paving the way, as Andy will attest to, in terms of the kind of way we've been dropping in. In fact, we even had the Beatles story from Annette Andre, who once spoke to Paul McCartney on the telephone when he phoned up wanting to speak to Jane Asher.
Absolutely. So we've been completely preparing for next Wednesday.
Exactly.
Everything's ready there for you, Phil.
It's sorted. You know, it's like we've been putting the universe has been putting together all these kind of things. Andy's been wearing his electrical engineering and telephonic sort of connections. He's been wiring things up. He's got out his cans here and there. It's been wonderful, generally. You know, and indeed, we've also been covering surf music as well, which was outrageously wonderful. Did Only Fools and Horses cross the Atlantic, Phil? Or was that theme tune that you just heard completely irrelevant to your good self, and did you have no clue whatsoever about Del Boy, Rodney, Plonkers, and other things?
Okay, I did not have any clue about it. And when it first started, I thought, okay, this is some interesting surf sound. And then I started listening to lyrics, and I've never heard this. I have no idea what this is. But that doesn't mean it hasn't made it to this side of the Atlantic. I mean, if you've listened to this week's Chill Pack Hollywood Hour, where I expressed absolute shock that the TV series Will and Grace is back. Apparently, I have missed 2 years' worth of announcements and publicity campaign. So maybe I'm not aware of things here. And in fact, I do rely on you, Alex, to hit me to things that are fantastic in my own backyard. To wit, last night, I went to the Hollywood Bowl to see the LA Philharmonic, under the conduction of Gustavo Dudamel, perform Mozart's Requiem. And singing the Requiem, none other than the Los Angeles Master Chorale. I knew not of the Master Chorale until I began these telephonic links with your good self, Alex. And, oh, they would have done you proud last night. This was extraordinary. The orchestra, of course, the chorale especially. I have never seen a full spontaneous standing ovation at the Hollywood Bowl before. And it was powerful, and it was prolonged, this expression of awe, really, for the production. So next time you link up with anyone from the Master Chorale, please, I don't know, it'll mean nothing to them, but tell them that Uncle Phil really approves of the work they're doing.
I feel in many ways, Phil, that's our duty here in Britain, to kind of make Americans aware of the goodnesses that they've actually got in their own country. It's wonderful. It's like I was watching Earth versus the Flying Saucers recently, the colourised version, because I'd just been to the Into the Unknown exhibition at the Barbican in London, and I thought, let's just check out some Ray Harryhausen classic material. So I saw Earth versus the Flying Saucers, and I thought, yes, that's the way forward. Sound, sonic sound, can confuse those UFOs, leading to happiness.
I saw last week Quatermass and the Pit, although here I guess it was called 5 Million Years to Mars or something like that.
X the Unknown, I think.
I believe it was the third of the Quatermass.
It was actually. It was the third with Barbara Shelley in the 1960s. It's all about a London tube station, which unfortunately was home to, well, Martians, actually. They thought it was Satan. They thought it was all sorts of things. And it was sending all sorts of madness through the whole thing. Very frightening. I was very traumatised by that as a child. And thankfully, the John Mills Quatermass in the 1970s with Huffety Puffety Ringstone Round opened up a whole new field. Andy, Quatermass, the precursor to Doctor Who?
No, these ones are completely passing me by. These ones, Alex. So I'm starting to make a note here. So there's clearly a bit of history that I've skipped.
I think so. I mean, in that period of time when you're working for Onyx Internet Systems, shameless plug. Is it still the same company?
No, we've changed names since then. We've been bought out and all that sort of thing. So
by an American company, perhaps?
No, Scottish company.
Scotland, hence Edinburgh.
There we go.
Shameless. But yes, in terms of the science fiction scenario, certainly the Quatipar scenario, which even my late mother used to watch it in black and white back in the day, she told me, before I was actually born. But it frightened some of the family so much they even had to be escorted home to actually sort of see the thing. But that was the thing, Quatermass and the Pit, which is what Phil's referring to. Again, the final shot, Phil, you've got to say, where the end credits roll and you literally just have Barbara Shelley and Bernard Quatermass as the characters, of course. Oh, well, Barbara Shelley is an actress playing a character. I think it's Andrew Keir, might be, as Professor.
Yeah, his first time. Because he had replaced the previous actor.
Yes,
I think,
yes, yeah. And they're basically just sitting totally exhausted, completely exhausted, just staring into that sort of middle, that million-yard stare that you actually have.
Yeah.
And I thought that was very profoundly awesome, really.
Definitely have to include that then.
I was impressed. I was impressed with it, yes. It was a very affecting movie still to this day.
And the thing is, if it's something that's kept those thoughts and those visions in both of your in your collective minds, then it's clearly got an impact, and that's what
those visions been implanted by the Martians? Are they just racial memories of deep-rooted psychoses that Phil and I have not yet admitted to?
You may be looking a bit far into those, Alex.
As you know, Andy, sometimes you're faced with all sorts of challenges, etc. I mean, this weekend I'm going to hopefully sort of get my vine trimmed from the back of the house. It's become an outrageous. It's like a triffid.
Ah, now there we go. There's one that I relate to.
Exactly. It's prevented me from ever watching any meteorite shower again, because I just thought, I don't want to go blind. Whatever. I just want to still watch those sort of things, you know, watch it safely. We've got to ask Phil. How did the eclipse go, Phil? Did you actually?
Oh well,
yeah.
Did you see the footage of our president staring at the eclipse?
I wondered if that was going to come up. Yeah.
There's a wonderful meme that's going around, because it's not just the footage of our president staring up at the eclipse. It's that you hear the voices of all the White House aides all around him yelling, "You can't look at it! Don't look at it!" And
welcome to television.
Oh, you say, oh, wow, 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 wow. Just in that minute, in that moment, suddenly we get all sorts of things. I'll tell you what, we've got a few moments left, so we'll try and get Phil back, because clearly the president was listening. Who knows what was actually happening? Here's Paul Weller. Paul, what you can't be today, you can be tomorrow. Isn't that right, Phil Learness?
Yes, or you can be just a few minutes from now when Alex reconnects the telephonic link.
Yeah, exactly, because, you know, when you start dissing the presidential views of the eclipse, who knows what could happen?
Oh my goodness, yes, we got cut off. That's all ixnay on all politics pay. Conversation gay, I guess, is really what we should be saying.
Profound. Or indeed, Andy, as you said, maybe it was just Annette talking about when things go wrong in live radio.
Yeah, real coincidence that not that long ago in the programme we were talking to Annette Andre, and we were talking about when systems fail.
Yep.
So
Annette, I'm blaming that one on you.
Anything can happen in the next half hour, or indeed 10 minutes with respect to Phil.
It's true. Where you put your energy, that is what will grow. So if you put your attention on malfunctions, then you're going to get malfunctions.
What you resist persists.
In the quantum universe, right, the observed is affected by the observer. So if you go looking for it, you will find it.
Mm. And these are the profound natures of what we'll be discussing probably at the Burley International Horse Trials, which are coming up very shortly. So, Andy, any questions you'd like to put to Phil Leardis about life, the universe, why Chilpack Hollywood is a must-listen-to podcast released to the world, usually every Monday, certainly by Tuesday, via chilpackhollywood.com and a variety of other platforms?
Well, why don't we find out, Phil? Why don't you tell us a little teaser about what you're going to be talking about very soon so we can get an idea of what's coming up.
Oh, see, now you've hit me 24 hours before I start scripting the show.
Excellent, excellent.
We have to talk about Jerry Lewis. We didn't get a chance to, because the news came that Jerry Lewis died while we were recording this week's show, and then the news came that it was a hoax, so we couldn't verify and therefore didn't talk about it. So we'll have to do that this week. We will reveal what we are allowed to reveal of Dean's return to his character of Langley, one of the lone gunmen on the X-Files. He was filming this week up in Vancouver.
Season 2, or is it season 12?
It's season 11.
Right, okay.
Yeah. So, thank you for playing, Alex, but sadly incorrect. Season 11. And it is interesting. I don't know if he'll be allowed to talk about what I'll talk about with you, but he's the only one of the lone gunmen returning. It's not all three of them. So it's a very interesting, at least at this point, this is not, they haven't shot all the episodes yet, and they're keeping them very secret, of course. So he doesn't. And maybe he'll know now. Maybe we'll find out whether he's going back for more episodes. But it's a good little part. People will be happy. It's not a peyote vision. It's not a dream sequence. It's not a flashback.
I thought Gillian Anderson was wonderful in American Gods. She was really good. She sort of really nails the role as wondrous.
I've heard it was very good, but I have not seen it.
Well, probably because you're psyching yourself up to see Luc Besson's Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets. Go and see it.
Do you own stock in Luc Besson Productions? Because if not, why do you keep shamelessly promoting it?
Because it needs every viewer to go and see it. I mean, it's probably been. I mean, we're talking currently of a flop the size of Heaven's Gate plus, really, and I think that's just outrageous. You know, these French film directors try so hard. And, you know, they deserve to celebrate it. I certainly think it was substantial. It was good. Much better than Dark Tower, which, sadly, I thought was disappointing. I just thought was, because the underlying theme for me in Dark Tower, the Stephen King, adaptation, of course, was that, ultimately you can solve all your problems simply by having more guns and more bullets. I don't think that's a positive image to go through. Still, we might.
Well, they just kept cutting that down and cutting that down and cutting it down, streamlining it, you know, it's tough. The one that everybody seems to be looking forward to, the Stephen King adaptation, is It, which comes out soon. Though I just don't know how you follow up on Tim Curry's Pennywise, which was so iconic, so terrifying. So I had a political joke I was going to make, but I don't want to get cut off again.
Exactly. Sometimes you've just got to sort of go up to the wire, realize the wire is there, and then step away from it. I mean, it's not as though we are Charlize Theron in Atomic Blonde, and you're in the...
Now, how is Atomic Blonde? Did you enjoy the Atomic Blonde?
Strangely, yes, actually. In a strange, bizarre way. I mean, I did feel, is it another excuse to simply have a 1980s soundtrack with some banging tunes with lots of kind of physical action and activities on screen, but actually, yes, I came out thinking this is okay. This is enjoyable. No spoilers, but I'm pleased to see that James McAvoy's character got his comeuppance. Is all I will say. And hopefully, there'll be a sequel. And then again, they may not.
Well, Charlize Theron's bona fides as a action hero are now absolutely unassailable. Mm. I would imagine.
Exactly so. Almost as high as the Cara Delevingne in Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets, and of course Suicide Squad, a movie not so close to Phil Leonis's heart, but never mind, so it goes. Phil, any questions?
Oh, did they make a Suicide Squad movie?
Yeah. Yes. Phil, have you got any questions you'd like to put to our engineer and all-round wonderful soul, Andy Brown? Because it's a rare chance when, I mean, one day he'll be back in the Lincoln Studios for Siren. He will come back, but we managed to sort of base him not too far away in the Northeastern sister station, etc., Southside Broadcasting, for however long we're here. Any questions you'd like to put to Andy about life, the universe, his recent trip to Spain, and other things?
Do you prefer engineering work, or do you prefer the on-air talent work?
Now that is a fantastic question, Phil, and that is it's really difficult because I don't tend to get a lot of on-air time, to be honest with you. It tends to be either fill-ins or panics or...
Help, Andy, help! The machine's not working!
When Alex kindly invites me into the studios...
Because I recognise talent, Andy.
I've got to admit, I do enjoy being behind the microphone like this. Engineering work has been my life for a very, very long time now, but I do like getting in front of the microphone and talking about what interests me and what fascinates me and that kind of thing. So, yeah, I think that's got to win out, Phil.
Introducing new concepts like the Surf City World and surfing music and Quatermass.
When I was young, there was some thought that I would pursue acting, and instead I pursued careers behind the camera. Though as I have matured and now look ahead to my 50s, I find myself more and more often entertaining opportunities to act and realizing that I am entertaining fewer and fewer opportunities to work behind the camera, and that those jobs are fewer and farther between, because behind-the-scenes work is hard. Mm-hmm. When you're the talent, it's so much more relaxing.
Well, you should see the talent round here, Phil. Obviously, the very excellent Alex sat just opposite me here. He has an excellent life, sat there talking over the microphone whilst I'm busy making everything work in the background.
It's like you're the sort of the house elf to the
exactly. When Alex, during a musical interlude, Alex shouts out, "Andy, engineer me a double cappuccino," that you realize you need to be living that life. Yes.
Yes. Anyway, obviously legal questions might be asked about that, and we need to come around to those last two questions. Andy, can you remember those last two interrogatives? We've used them several times since we launched them at the start of the whole program. Do you think you can actually go with them for Phil Davis there?
I certainly can. So, Phil, have you had an interesting telephonic conversation with us today?
Well, two, really, thanks to my national security agency here in the U.S. cutting off our first one. So, yes.
Two for the price of one, exactly. And will you return to the airways with us once more in the near future?
Yes, I believe, Alex, I might be issuing a weather report, right, on the morning edition?
That, and also hopefully back live with us on the first sort of back in Lincoln sort of midweek drive thingy as well, because this is going to be a bonus podcast plus more things that will be emerging, so yes.
So we are back live on Wednesdays next week.
That would seem to be the case, yes, Phil. Barring any
fingers
major
crossed.
Fingers crossed.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's the way forward. And let's reciprocate, Phil. Would you like to ask Andy how he's found his last two English hours in the midweek drive land?
First of all, and how long can you do the conversion of English hours to American hours for me?
Oh, it depends. It depends at what time of the day it is, Phil. It does depend.
It's true. Again, time, and people always say this, time is speeding up, and that is not just a feeling of it. Mathematically, the observers affect the observed, so if you feel that way, it is true that time goes faster.
Absolutely.
So I look forward to enjoying some English hours, my good self. Alex, Andy, have you enjoyed your show today?
I have, absolutely, Phil, and it's been brightened that bit more by speaking to your good self this afternoon as well.
Will we get to hear you again in the near future?
I certainly hope so, on the next chance that I can come and meet up with Alex and all the fantastic guests.
Cheery bye, Phil. Happy trails.
tears from your little so sister. Long, ciao.
Crying because she doesn't have a dress for her. Ready for the party to go. But you know, she'll get by. Cause she's living in the love of the common people. Smile from the heart of a family man. Daddy's gonna buy you a dream to cling to. Mama's gonna love it just as much as she can. There. People fall through the hole in your pocket and you lose it in the snow on the ground. You gotta walk in the town to find a job. Trying to keep your hands warm. When the hole in your shoe, let the snow come through until you're to the bone. Somehow you better go home where it's warm. Where you can live in the love of the common people. Smile from the heart of a family man. Daddy's gonna buy you a dream to cling to. Mama's gonna love you just as much as she can. And she can. Closer the knit, the tighter the fit, and the chills stay away. Just take them in stride for family pride. You know that faith is your foundation. With a whole lot of love and a warm conversation. But don't forget to pray. Just making it strong where you belong. And we're living in the love of the common people. Smiles from the heart of a family man. Daddy's gonna buy you a dream to cling to. Mama's gonna love it just as much as she can. She can. Yes, we're living in the love of the common people. Smiles from the heart of a family man. Daddy's gonna buy you a dream to cling to. Mama's gonna love her just as much as she can. Living in the love of the common people. Smiles from the heart of a family man. Daddy's gonna buy you a dream to cling to. Mama's gonna love her just as much as she can. Gonna love it just as much.